day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad that you decided to join us. I've taken myself out of the sport of political prognostication pretty firmly these days. I'm not really good at it, and politics is so crazy these days that it kind of seems pointless to guess at what's going to happen. But I can admit that I had a pretty firm belief that President Joe Biden would serve just one term. I thought that when he was elected the first time, and I haven't ever sort of wavered off that notion. So I was really surprised recently when he said he is going to seek re-election. I couldn't believe it, really. He's 80 years old. That's the same age as my mother, for instance. And as independent as she is, as healthy as she is these days, there's no way I could imagine her taking on the responsibility at that level, doing all the things that a president would need to do. Now, of course, President Joe Biden has been president for nearly 3 years now, and he's actually gotten a lot done. The huge spending on getting rid of the COVID pandemic and its aftermath, the infrastructure law, the CHIPS and Science Act, the Inflation Reduction Act. He has a really long list of accomplishments already. And we're seeing the benefits of a lot of those things. And that doesn't mean that there aren't some real drawbacks to him having been president. He never did pass Build Back Better. He hasn't been able to overcome the bitter political partisanship that defines us, and the high inflation that we've been suffering under is a lingering, serious problem. But again, with Biden's recent decision to run for re-election, I think there's an even bigger question to address, and that has to do with his age. If he wins re-election, he'll be 82. And if he serves the entirety of a second term, he'll be 86 when it's over. Now, I'm not an ageist, but again, I recognize that the president's job is one of the hardest tasks that exists. And this just leaves me wondering if it's such a good idea for Biden to be running for that position again. That's where we want to begin the conversation. Am I wrong to be questioning whether Joe Biden should be seeking a second term to the presidency? Why is he doing it? Why isn't the Democratic Party doing a little more soul searching and questioning about his candidacy, given that there seem to be lots of other possibilities? One in particular works pretty closely with Joe Biden. Why shouldn't Kamala Harris, who is the vice president of the United States, be the candidate in 2024? A little later in the hour, we're going to talk a little more about local politics and oversight of local politics here in the city of Detroit and how that's changing right now. But before we get there, we do want to talk about Biden's reelection bid. And we've got a really great guest to help us think through this. EJ Dion is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. He's a syndicated columnist for the Washington Post and a university professor at Georgetown University. He's also authored lots of books about politics over the years, and is one of the nation's closest political watchers. EJ, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Oh, a joy to be with you. Always great to be on Detroit Today.
Yeah, great to have you here. So I'm going to start with your reaction to President Biden's announcement that he would seek a second term. As I said in the open, I was shocked. And I am not, again, really into political prognostication anymore because I just don't see much point in it. But I had really believed he wouldn't do this. What was your reaction?
Well, first, I want to say I turned in my membership card in the Prognosticators Union around midnight of Election Day 2016. So I agree with you that prognostication ain't what it used to be, and it was always problematic. You know, listening to your lead-in, I had a thought that, you know, Joe Biden is a loyal church-going Catholic. Pope Francis is 86, which yes. would be Joe Biden's age when he got out. So maybe Pope Francis is his role model here. I'm a Catholic. I think he's a pretty good role model.
He is. But
moving right along from that, you know, I've gone both ways on this myself. There's a lot of me that thought for a long time that Biden would be well served as a one-term president. He could say, I ran to save the country from Donald Trump, to save democracy, to get us on a better track. I've done that. He could cite all the stuff he did accomplish in his term of office. And he could have spent the last year and a half, or however you want to count it, saying everything I do now is just to prepare the country to move forward after me. And I always thought that was a plausible route for him. But you raise a good question, which is, why is it that on the whole, particularly if you look at the Democratic Party's leadership class, they're more or less at peace with Biden mm-hmm. making this decision. There is no Democrat, major Democrat, proposing to run against him in the primaries. And you have to ask, well, why is that? If this were a real problem, someone out there would say, I ought to be running against Joe Biden. And I think the reason their support is twofold, really it's the same fold, which is, I think a lot of Democrats look forward and say, if Biden didn't run, there would be a potentially very divisive, ideologically divisive, as well as personally divisive, fight to succeed him that would dominate the news from between now and whenever that fight was settled. And the party could tear itself apart. And I think Joe Biden has shown that he is the one figure who can kind of sit over the party's divisions, who makes the center comfortable. But the left is not all that unhappy with him. They have some criticisms, but they look at what he did accomplish and say, yeah, we can go with Biden again. And so I think the first reason is that he can keep the party together. And the second reason related to that is what you heard a lot is that Biden felt that he was the one guy who showed that he could beat Donald Trump. Now, granted, while his popular vote margin was really big, 7 million votes, mm-hmm. and he was comfortably ahead in the Electoral College, if you look down at the state level, it's a very small number of votes that made the difference between a majority and a minority of the Electoral College. Nonetheless, I think Biden sees himself as someone who can beat Trump. And although both of us agreed we're not going to be prognosticators, if you look at the polling right now, it does look like Trump is going to be the nominee. And so I think that's why he did it. And the other thing is he likes the job. Mm-hmm. And I think he wasn't ready to go. He spent his whole life trying to get to the White House, and he wasn't about to give it up. That's not a substantive reason, I think, for the rest of us. But I think the analysis of where the Democratic Party might be if he didn't run is why there's a fair amount of support for him. You know, there's actually strong support for his reelection in the party.
Yeah. So I want to talk about his approval ratings just for a second, and whether under different circumstances, if Donald Trump weren't on the political landscape and that weren't a likely opponent, I guess, for whoever was going to be the Democratic nominee, 41%. That's pretty low for this point in someone's presidency, and I feel like it would play a bigger role in this discussion if not for the particular circumstances. But talk about that 41% approval and what it actually means to the chances for re-election.
Well, I think the premise of your question is right, that if Trump did not loom out there, I think there would have been a better chance that Biden would have said, okay, job done, Trump's gone, and I don't run for re-election. So I do think Trump looming out there played a role in his calculations. And I've asked Biden people the very question you just asked, which is, look at his approval rating, what do you make of that? And what they argue, and I later went back and looked it up, and their claim on this is true, which is that the approval rating in all of our democracies isn't what it used to be. If you look at most of the major democracies, Biden's approval rating is higher than that of many other incumbent leaders. I looked around at Canada, Germany, France, Britain, a lot of the other democracies. And so there's just a lot of discontent out there in general. What I think that the Biden people are concerned about is his rating on the economy. And I think that the biggest wild card in this election, which is why you and I are smart not to make any predictions, is what will happen with the economy. We just saw the takeover of the First Republic Bank. Will there be even a small recession? Is not good for a president. And even when the economy is pretty good, you know, if you look at the numbers, the Economist magazine a few weeks back did a great cover story on how the American economy is again a model for the world. People still don't feel great about it. I think there's a pandemic hangover. There are still people aren't feeling as secure, but you know, wages have been going up even after inflation. The unemployment rate is at an incredibly low level right now. And so I think their bigger concern is they would like his approval rating to bump up, and I'm sure they hope it will. But I think their bigger concern is getting better ratings on the economy that'll make swing voters say, you know what, I may think he's too old, but he's done all right. I'm doing all right. I'm going to vote for him again. And I think that's what they got to work on most.
Yeah. I'm talking with E.J. Dionne. He's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, a syndicated columnist for The Washington Post, and a university professor in the Foundations of Democracy and Culture program at Georgetown University. We're talking about President Joe Biden and his recent announcement that despite his age, I suppose, he is 80 years old, he is going to seek re-election in 2024. If he wins, he would be 82. When that happens, he would be 86 when he would finish a second term. What do you think about that? What do you make of President Joe Biden's decision to run a second time? But also, what do you make of the record he's put together since he was elected in 2020? Would you prefer another candidate on the Democratic side next year? There are some folks throwing their names into the ring. No really prominent candidates yet. No one who seems to much threaten the president in that primary. But who would you toss into the ring if you were thinking about another name? Give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number here. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can make you part of the program that way. I want to read a couple Twitter comments before we get to phones. Michael says, seems like part of the reason Biden's running again is that Dems are aware Trump is likely the candidate on the Republican side, and Biden is positioned to beat him. That we have allowed Trump to get to this point again is another topic and scary. Dragon Lady on Twitter says, Joe Biden is boring and safe and dependable. He is not the man you date. He's the man you marry. Really interesting take there. Let's go back to the phones here. Bernadette in Old Redford. Bernadette, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Stephen. If the choice is between Trump and Biden, it's got to be Biden. But what scares me is that there are men who would never want a woman for president, and I think those were some of the black men who voted for Trump. Hmm. So if Biden does have health issues that would force the vice president to take over, that might be a consideration. I don't know who I would want. I like Elizabeth Warren, but she's no spring chicken, and her voice is kind of shrill. And she needs to have, you know, a voice like Mrs. Obama, something soothing, something a lower range. She's not a beauty queen.
Bernadette, I really appreciate the take there on all of this. You know, the position of the vice president in all of this, EJ, I think is interesting, given that certainly if the president weren't seeking re-election, Kamala Harris would be among the hopefuls on the Democratic side. At the same time, in practical terms, a second term for Biden might, I guess, set her up maybe better to be president at some point and make it easier for her to get that. I don't know what your, I'm curious about what your take is on her and where she fits into all of this.
Well, first of all, Bernadette has a soothing voice, so maybe she ought to throw
she
her.
She ought to run too,
in
right?
The ring. That was great. I mean, she made a good point about Vice President Harris. I agree with your premise. I think Harris would actually be better off at the end of a second term, and for a couple of reasons. I think the Biden people are realizing now what they might have realized earlier, which is with Joe Biden's age, Kamala Harris is going to be an issue in this election because just the actuarial tables say there's a more, it's more likely that she might succeed to the presidency under an 80-year-old president than under a 60-year-old president. There's people think that. There's nothing wrong with pondering that. And that I don't think they did enough to help her build up her own popularity in the country. And people can ascribe it to her shortcomings. I think Bernadette is right. I also think there's some sexism and some racism underlying her, the negative side of her rating. But they, I think what the Biden people are now doing is saying, this has got to be the Biden-Harris ticket. And I think you're going to see a lot of work done over, you know, for the rest of 2023 to have her improve her standing with the public, precisely because of that issue in the back of people's minds. The one thing I don't agree with that I've seen written out there is Democrats don't have any alternatives to Biden. As Bernadette suggested, I think there are a lot of alternatives, potential alternative Democratic candidates. I'm personally very interested in your Governor Whitmer, you know, with her extraordinary victory in the last election. Cory Booker, Amy Klobuchar, Roy Cooper, Elizabeth Warren might run again. Bernie Sanders still has a following, although he is older than President Biden. But I think, and Vice President Harris, obviously. So I think there are a lot of potential strong, potentially strong Democratic candidates out there. But again, I think what is imperative for the Biden folks and for Vice President Harris is to have her poll numbers be somewhat better by the end of the year than they are now. So I think you're going to see a lot more of her doing interesting things between now and the end of the year.
Yeah.
And to go to your point, if Biden wins and is successful, I think she will be in a much stronger position 4 years from now.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue talking with EJ Dionne about President Biden and his decision to seek re-election. Also, we'll continue to hear from you on the phones and on social. Jimmy in Birmingham and Robert in Ann Arbor will be up next. If you want to join them, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones, and you can always go to Twitter and hashtag us. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
WDET is your connection to what's happening in Detroit.
WDET is your place for open dialogue about the issues that impact you.
Stay in the know.
This is WDET FM,
Detroit's NPR station.
This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and thanks for joining. Even Joe Biden himself knows that people are looking a little askance at his run for re-election. At the White House Correspondents' Dinner last weekend, he leaned into it a little and made a joke about himself. Let's take a listen.
Folks, I know a lot's changed in the press. I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of you. This is not your father's press from 20 years ago. No, I'm serious, and you all know it better than I do. But still, it is absolutely consequential and essential. After all, I believe in the First Amendment, not just because my good friend Jimmy Madison wrote it.
President Biden cracking a bit wise about how old he might be. Was he friends with James Madison, the author of the Bill of Rights? Maybe. I don't know. I think that was a sign over the weekend that everyone is really thinking about what it means to have someone who is 80 years old say he's going to run for president again. That's what we're talking about today with E.J. Dionne, who is a Washington Post syndicated columnist, a university professor in the Foundations of Democracy and Culture program at Georgetown University, and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. We want to hear from you as well during the conversation. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll include you that way. Let's go next to Robert in Ann Arbor. Robert, welcome to the show.
Yeah, you know, I think the last person, and I didn't catch their name, had a great point. I do think President Joe Biden is going to have to, in some ways, kind of advertise or show some sort of shining characteristic of Kamala Harris, because I actually don't really agree with a lot of the other names they dropped. I don't think there's a lot of other Democrats, either in the cabinet or nationally, that have that same sort of, branding that really sticks out. And unfortunately, I think some progressives are a little wary of Kamala Harris. I think they're frankly a little wary of Joe Biden, but I think especially with the correspondence dinner last week and some new marketing with an interesting T-shirt design on his campaign website, I think he's trying to fix that. But to me, as I think a younger voter, I'm wondering where I can find a sort of connection with the Democratic Party, considering how old some of the kind of front runner candidates are getting. I mean, I saw someone mentioned Bernie.
So Robert, EJ referenced Governor Whitmer in the beginning of the program. I wonder, since you live here in Michigan, what do you think of her maybe jumping to the national stage?
I have to say, I think Governor Whitmer is in many ways a very attractive choice. I think she's gotten a lot of national attention for some, really unfortunate reasons that mostly have to do with, some terrible threats made against her. Policy-wise, I'm not sure what she's going to hold up, what she would advertise. I mean, I think she's personally a very, very strong candidate. I just don't know if she has that sort of national appeal. Maybe running for Senate would be a better move first. I don't know.
Yeah. Robert, I really appreciate the call and the perspective. EJ, talk about the roster, I guess, on the Democratic side that goes beyond Governor Whitmer, who I think does have quite a national profile, and if she wanted, could probably make waves in a Democratic primary. But who else would you put on the list now?
Let me just get to that. I want to say two things about what the caller said. One is, I agree with what I think is his underlying premise, which is there's no way Joe Biden could dump Kamala Harris off the ticket, Vice President Harris. Sure. The cost of that would be extraordinary. And they know that. And that's why I think her position on the ticket is unassailable for this time around second. I was glad you referred to that White House Correspondents' Dinner speech. And I think this is an interesting thing to watch on the age issue, since that's what we're talking about, which is, I think when Biden gives a major address like that one, he was really funny and good at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. He was strong in his State of the Union message. I think where they got to amp him up, he's got to sort of reach that point on day-to-day regular announcements. That's where, you know, when he has, if you will, the high energy Biden of the big occasion, I think begins to answer some of the doubts that you've raised. I think he's just got to find his way to that level on a regular basis. I am one of those people who thinks Governor Whitmer is a serious national figure. If not this time, she's not going to run against Joe Biden for the future. And I think it's not only Governor Whitmer, but if you look at what's happened to the whole Democratic Party in Michigan, you know, Democrats, when they look around for candidates, want somebody who's not only got a record themselves, but has a record of bringing in people who can support a particular agenda. I think she's got that. I think when you look back at the 2020 race, I think two people who stand out from that race, even though he didn't do well in the primaries, Cory Booker is a very interesting figure, Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota, Pete Buttigieg, whom I interviewed last week, is a continually fascinating figure. And then you do have Elizabeth Warren, as the earlier caller suggested. I'm not sure she's going to jump back in. Bernie Sanders will have a base in the Democratic Party as long as he wants to have a base. I don't think he would win the nomination, but, you know, Bernie will will be a voice in the party for a long time. And then I'm intrigued by some of the other governors, you know, Roy Cooper, certainly Gavin Newsom in California would be interested in running. Governor Pritzker is very interested. So there are a lot of people out there. I just don't buy. My friend, a conservative columnist, Ramesh Panuru, had a column today in the Post saying, you know, Biden's running because the bench is so weak. I just don't agree with Ramesh on that. And I think the bench will get stronger with time.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, really appreciate the call and the comments. Let's go to Robert in Detroit. You're up next.
I just want to say that, you know, I like Joe Biden a lot. And his age is a concern for everyone, Democrats and Republicans. And what I like about him is his calm demeanor, his ability to unite people, and his ability to work in the Congress to get legislation passed. Now, I think having Kamala Harris as a vice president is a great choice. We don't know a lot about her, but I don't see anything wrong with her. The thing is, I would like to see her with a running mate who's like Joe Biden, not necessarily old, but someone from the Congress who can get things done, has a nice demeanor and all that stuff. And this is a weird situation because we don't normally have very old people running for president. So the question comes in, how does a potential vice president who might very well assume that role showcase who she would have as a running mate or he? You know, do they kind of pal around or something like that? Is how do we introduce Kamala Harris with somebody that might be able to provide some of the things that Joe Biden has to offer? And I like Governor Whitmer a lot, but I don't see her in that role.
Yeah,
she doesn't have the background in Congress.
Yeah, it's a great question, Robert. EJ, what's the answer to his question?
You know, I got to say, I'm just sitting here. I'm still, as a married guy, I'm still smarting from the caller who talked about you know, the guys you marry, boring, safe, and dependable. Do we have to be boring to be safe and dependable? But I actually think she made a good point, which is that, you know, there is a sense of, people may worry about Biden's age, but partly because of the age, and his campaign is going to try to figure out a way to play with this. They know he's dependable because they really know who he is from a long history. And, you know, I've been around so long that I covered Joe Biden when he was the new generation candidate back in 1987. Yeah. But that means they know him. In terms of the caller, I think the last thing the Biden campaign wants to do is to have Kamala Harris suggesting a running mate because that raises the whole issue. That's the premise of this show. But I do agree with him that, you know, I think that she does need to persuade, you know, Americans who are persuadable. The hardcore Republicans are never going to like Kamala Harris. This is all about the middle of the electorate. And I think there's one area where she can really campaign hard. And that's on a theme that I wrote about recently, which is I was really struck by both Biden's video and his first ad that he wants to run on freedom. That was the word he mentioned over and over again. And you've heard a lot of talk about that in Michigan politics, that Republicans have felt that they had a sort of lock on the word freedom since the days of Reagan and Goldwater. And, you know, not only because of the abortion issue, but also LGBTQ issues, you know, in the case of Governor DeSantis using state power to go after Disney when they disagreed with him on issues, book bans. I think that there is a way in which the freedom issue appeals to a lot of swing voters out there who may not be wild about Joe Biden, about everything, but they don't like the right wing of the Republican Party or where it's going on these issues. And I think you're going to hear a lot from not only Biden, but also Kamala Harris and the whole party about the freedom issue. And I think that's one way she's going to try to build herself up.
Yeah. Scotty on Twitter says, if he gives Dems the best chance to keep Trump out of office, then Biden 2024 and Biden 2028 and Biden 2032. So Scotty's all on the president.
There's a little constitutional problem with that, right. And that amendment wasn't written by Jimmy Madison.
That's exactly right. Boone on Twitter says Katie Porter for VP. That's an interesting name we haven't heard in the comments.
By the way, political junkies, keep an eye on California. What a fascinating Senate race.
Absolutely.
Out there.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's go back to the phones here. Carolyn in Royal Oak, you're up next. Carolyn.
Hi. My doctor for many years retired at age 93 and functioned very well up until then. He finally died at over 100. Uh-huh. Also, Grace Lee Boggs was very active in our area of Detroit and lived until about 100. I think this is almost a case of ageism that they're using. Hmm. People are living longer, and some are operating mentally at a very high level.
Yeah. No, Carolyn, you're absolutely right. And like I said, when we opened the show, I don't want to be accused of ageism here. My concern is really about the rigor of the job and whether it makes sense at that age, you know, to be able to expect someone to do all of that. EJ, talk about the ways in which Biden has managed the age question and whether these concerns are really legitimate about, again, the rigor. I mean, this is, if not the toughest job in the world, it's one of them, and it's unrelenting. Does it make sense for someone of that age to be expected to keep up with it?
The answer, I think, is yes, people that age can keep up with it. I think the caller, I appreciated the call, not only because the older I get, the more I think wisdom is a very important virtue, you know.
Sure.
So I'm with her on that. And I do think that if the opposition plays the age issue wrong and in too ham-handed a way, there is going to be a kind of backlash that she described. But I think what Biden needs to do is be out there the way he was at the correspondence dinner, the way he was in the State of the Union message, and just show people that he is up for the job. And I think the biggest problem he has are people who actually wish him well and worry each time he speaks, you know, is he going to give the other side fodder on the age issue? And I think, as he has said, and I think he's right about this, there's only one way to settle this issue, which is to watch him. I think there'll be voters out there who just think that, as you said at the beginning of the show, some people are going to say he's just too old to run for re-election. But then what the Biden campaign has to do is get back to people's feelings, yes, but is he safe and dependable, even if he's boring? I guess I'm going to canonize that caller and by the, before the show is over. But I think that, the safe and dependable part is key. And, you know, again, a lot of the voters he needs are middle of the road kind of voters in suburban areas who really do not want a dangerous president. And I think that, whatever people think about the age issue, I don't think anybody looks at Joe Biden as a dangerous figure. I think they might look at some of his potential opponents on the other side that way.
Yeah, yeah. Before I let you go, I really want to ask you briefly about a book you published last year, 100% Democracy, The Case for Universal Voting. That's such an interesting idea. Talk about why that's so important to you.
Well, God bless you for bringing up our book. In our book, we argue that the U.S. should adopt a version of Australia's system. There are other countries that have it. It's been particularly successful in Australia, of requiring everybody to cast a ballot. And I could go into details of the proposal. It's that fine is small. It's not, there is no interest involved. It's easily waived. We also give, in good libertarian fashion, if people really don't want to vote, they can apply for conscientious objector status. But we think this system works because it basically forces every state to tear down barriers to voting, mm-hmm. that because everyone as a matter of citizenship is expected to vote, then the job of every state government is to make it as easy as possible for people to cast ballots. And with voting rights under threat in about half the states in our country, we think saying to every citizen, one of the most basic jobs of citizenship is to vote. You both sort of expand the obligations, basic, you expand a notion of citizenship, but you also fight the vote suppressors. And in Australia, 97% of people are registered, 90% vote. I think it would increase the legitimacy of our democracy. And if people want to look at the idea, we try to deal with arguments against this. This is floating around states now. My colleague, Miles Rappaport, the co-author, is out there pushing it through states. I think it's got a shot out in Washington State, last I looked. So we're hoping for state experiments with this idea and local experiments where they can happen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting pushback to the efforts in a lot of states to make it harder for people to vote and to disqualify more people from being able to cast ballots. It's kind of the other extreme. Okay, EJ Dionne, it's always really great to have you here with us on Detroit Today. Thanks so much for joining today.
A real joy to be with you. Thank you so much.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. We're going to stay on the topic of politics when we come back, but we're going to pivot to Detroit and talk about how political oversight works in the city and maybe how we might improve it. Stay with us for more Detroit Today. We'll be right back.